What do you remember from yesterday? Anything?
The sages somehow adhered to the reading of the
sutra. Maybe they protested, but they accepted it.
The sages care also for the material welfare of the citizens.
Yes.
Because without material welfare, people's minds are only thinking about matter. That's the reality of the situation.
When Prabhupada went coming to India from New Zealand, he stopped in Bangkok for a day, and he said the people here are too poor to take to Krishna consciousness. I never heard him say anything like that before. Now they're quite wealthy. Because if one is poor, one is just thinking how to get money, how to get money, how to get money. This is at least the very strong tendency of the people in general. Anything else? The last thing?
King Angad, when he left, he was absconded.
Yeah, not whimsical. A great soul cannot act whimsically. There is some inspiration from Krishna. Now, Sringa Devi, did you have a... remember something? Who? Vena. Yes, he stopped them specifically from performing their prescribed duties, including sacrifices for the pleasure of the Lord, for the pleasure of the Supreme Person, His personality.
The sage tried to advise the king, Vena, to not stop the sacrifice.
Yes, this is the point right at the end. Don't, please, they spoke to him so sweetly, please, O great hero, O best of kings. Huh? A noble one, please, for your own reputation and life and opulences to increase, just let everyone perform sacrifices for the pleasure of the Lord. The demigods will be pleased. So many blessings will come about on you. Don't stop these sacrifices. Because without sacrifice, there is no prosperity, spiritual or material. Sacrifice means to give up one thing for another good, a greater good. So in youth we sacrifice the playing tendency to get education because we know that by education we'll be able to do something in life. In one's old age, one sacrifices the tendency to just want to be comfortable, to learn dependence upon Krishna and renunciation from material, sacrificing. This is the purpose of life, sacrificing the lower tendencies for the higher tendencies. And when sacrifices are directed to please Krishna, that is the highest of tendencies. So the sages, they begged, they requested in their honorable way that the king act properly, nobly, according to his duty, and not stop sacrifices. So the king's response, King Vena's response, was typical of someone with a demonic mentality. He became angry and proud. He already was proud and he became angry. King Vena replied, this is text 23, "You are not at all experienced. The sages, including Bhrigu Muni, were advising him," and this was his response, "You are not at all experienced. It is very much regrettable that you are maintaining something, you are suggesting something, which is not religious. They're telling him to follow sacrifices, follow the Shastra. And he's saying, this is irreligious. And you're accepting that which is irreligious as if it was religious. He's accusing them of the mode of ignorance. Not knowing what are actual religious principles. Indeed, I think you're giving up your real husband who maintains you and are searching after some paramour to worship. The same point he's going to make in the 25th verse, so we'll just read quickly the 24th and the 25th. Those who out of gross ignorance do not worship the King, who is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, experience happiness neither in this world nor in the world after death. You are so much devoted to the demigods. But who are they? Indeed, your affection for these demigods is exactly like the affection of an unchaste woman who neglects her married life and gives attention to her paramour. Prabhupada explains in his purport to 23 how what he's saying is that the King is the one who's maintaining you in this world. You should understand this. The King, by his charity, is maintaining the Brahmins. And look, are you respecting the person who is naturally maintaining you? Are you respecting me? No. You are putting your attention to someone else, the demigods, expecting favors from them. Just like an unchaste wife neglects the person who's maintaining her husband and seeks a paramour's attention. Just see what kind of people you are. And you're advising me about religion? You're irreligious, as irreligious as an unchaste wife. Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and notice he's putting Lord Vishnu in this category, it's 26 and 7. Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, Vayu, the master of air, Yama, the superintendent of death, who happens to, what was his relationship with Vena? What's direct, the one word? Grandfather, yes. His own grandfather. Yamaraj, the superintendent of death. The sun god, the director of rainfall. Kuvera, the treasurer. The moon god, the predominating deity of the earth. Agni, the fire god. Varuna, the lord of waters. And all others who are great and competent to bestow benedictions or to curse, all abide in the body of the King. For this reason, the King is known as the reservoir of all demigods who are simply parts and parcels of the King's body. Purport. There are many demons who think themselves as the supreme and present themselves as the directors of the sun, moon, and other planets. This is all due to false pride. False pride is due to maya or illusion, because in fact every living entity is a tiny, insignificant servant of Krishna, and we either serve directly or indirectly. It is unavoidable that we serve. Every living entity is insignificant. This is intolerable with someone who is covered deeply and thickly by false ego. He cannot accept this, that I am just insignificant. Because false ego makes us imagine that we are central to the universe. And to be central to the universe, things must be working according to your control. So this is, of course, illusion. There are tantric or mystic meditations where one imagines actually one is controlling the sun and it is rising by my power. One is controlling the moon. One is controlling this and that. There are meditations like this, demonic meditations. So this is all due to false pride. Similarly, King Vena developed the demonic mentality and presented himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such demons are numerous in the age of Kali, and all of them are condemned by great sages and saintly persons. So what is Prabhupada saying here? That a sage or a saintly person, when confronted with someone who is claiming to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a so-called incarnation, he must be condemned. A sage will condemn him. King Vena continued, his arrogance knows no limit. For this reason, for which reason? What did he just say? It's referring to things he just said. Oh, Brahmins, you should abandon your envy of me. What were they trying to suggest that he do? Worship the Supreme Lord, and in that way worship the demigods. And what is he suggesting? Instead of doing that, worship the king. All the demigods exist in his body. And what is the reason they are neglecting the king? There could only be one possible reason. You should abandon your envy of me. And by your ritualistic activities, you should worship me and offer me all paraphernalia. If you are intelligent, you should know there is no personality superior to me who can accept the first oblations of all sacrifice. So he's imitating, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, he's imitating the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as if he was the Supreme Lord. So this is characteristic of a demonic person. Should we hear something about the demonic attitude? This is described in which chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? 16. 16, yes. Because it describes, I read it just recently in the Bhagavatam, it describes that the Bhagavatam describes many things in one of Prabhupada's purports. He said it describes the Supreme Lord, because we need to know who is the Lord, what are his characteristics. It describes the devotees of the Lord. The Bhagavatam very much describes the devotees of the Lord. Why? Because we have to see and hear about what the proper attitude and activities of someone are. Their example, we should follow how they devotedly worship the Lord. But also Prabhupada explained in this purport that the Bhagavatam describes the demonic. Now what possible reason do you think that the Bhagavatam can describes the demonic, and what can we learn from these descriptions? If we learn from watching the devotees how to act, what do we learn from hearing about the demonic?
We can try to see to have this tense in our heart, and then seeing how it's very bad, and we become distasteful and
they have at the end we find that there is a demonic there, the sculpture.
Yes. They're finished, they die. Does that mean that here we see Vena's going to be killed? We see Hiranyakashipu is killed. Hiranyaksha has been killed. What other demons?
Ravana.
Huh? Ravana. Putana. More demons. We like to hear how the demons are killed. Huh? Yes, yes, yes. So many. Kamsa, yes. Smashed. Does that mean that every demonic person in this world is going to be killed by Krishna? No? Who are they going to be killed by then? Well, is Kala Krishna's energy? Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Sarvas Haram Saham. Mrityu Sarvas. Savas Haras Chaham, that he is death, Kalusman, Lokachayakrit, through time. It is Krishna who is killing everyone. He will kill every demonic person. But does that mean that the devotees will live, or the devotees too will die? Well, if one identifies with the body, he's going to die. And it's a demonic identification. A devotee identifies with being Krishna's servant eternally. Jivera Sarup Hoy, Krishna Nityadas. But this can't again be superficial. We have to keep things off the superficial platform. So we want to find out what are the, if any of these demonic characteristics that Krishna is going to describe here, and we see, we'll recognize very clearly so many of them have been demonstrated by Vena. But this is how Krishna describes the demonic characteristic, and we should really try to avoid demonic characteristics, because they will mean our death, and they don't. And on the other side, they mean that we don't have the ability to love Krishna. Those who are demonic do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. They say that the world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of their life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds and thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. The demonic person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, it will increase in the future. More and more. He is my enemy, I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything, I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices, I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. Self-complacent, always impudent. What does impudent mean? Yes, disrespectful. To, specifically to superiors. Which disrespectful. Self-complacent. I'm just the way I am is just right. Don't try to disrupt this perfection that you are now seeing before you. self-complacent and always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige. They sometimes proudly perform sacrifice in name only, without following any rules or regulations. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others, and blaspheme against the real religion. And then Krishna says what he does with such persons. Those who are envious and mischievous, tanaham dvishata kroran samsadeshu naradama, who are the lowest amongst men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. That is the result. I think Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, I think it was he who told me that, yes, according to the Madhvas, they use this verse to show that hell is eternal. You can actually eternally go to hell. That is not the Gaudiya Vaishnava conclusion, but this is heavy. After attaining repeated birth amongst the species of demonic life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually, they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. And Prabhupada, in the purport to that verse, says what those most abominable types of existence are. He mentions specifically dogs and hogs. Soul covered. And then, in the next verse, and then we'll stop, Krishna explains, Trivedam Narakesham. To this hell, there are three gates that will take you there. Should you walk through these gates, you will go downward to these hell perpetually. And they are what? Lust, anger, and greed. Lust, anger, and greed. And therefore, Krishna himself says, every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. So, Vena. Reacted in that way, in that false prestige filled arrogant way to the gentle words of the sages, he just displayed his own illusion and ignorance. Maitreya Muni continued speaking to Vidura, and he described what happened next. Now there's something in here, in the next verse, I'll read these two together. That struck me in an interesting way. See if there's anything that really strikes you too. Thus the king, who became unintelligent due to his sinful life and deviation from the right path, became actually bereft of all good fortune. So many interesting things. So many pertinent and relevant things for our own lives. He became unintelligent due to his sinful life, and that unintelligence, the sins came first, then the covers the intelligence, and then it caused that attitude that was so full of arrogance and deviation from the right path. He became actually bereft of good fortune. The sages were advising him how to become fortunate. And he completely refuted in his own mind their advice and told them how they should become fortunate by worshipping him and giving up their envy of him. He could not accept the requests of the great sages which the sages put before him with great respect, and therefore he was condemned. My dear Vidura, all good fortune unto you. the foolish king who thought himself very learned, thus insulted the great sages, and the sages, being broken-hearted by the king's words, became very angry at him. What struck me at that time was that broken-heartedness of the sages. They were hoping. They gave him a chance. He was bad, but they gave him a chance. He wasn't using his chance properly. They tried to gently correct him using all diplomacy and sweet, gentle words. And he criticized them and chastised them, even though they knew they were giving him good advice for his welfare. And their hearts broke. And then they became angry. Or more accurately, the anger they were hiding came out. Hanyatam, Asha, kill him, kill him. His chance was finished. Kill him, kill him. Papa, Prakriti, Daruna, he is the most dreadful, sinful person. If he lives, he will certainly turn the whole world into ashes in no time. Jivan Jagaras Asav Asu, very quickly, the whole world, Kurute Bhasmasad Dhruvam, he will certainly turn the whole world into bhasma, into ashes. By his sinful nature, he will stop the sacrifices. He will stop the elevation of people. He is sinful. The population will become sinful. It will burn to ashes. He must be killed. His position is too responsible. Prabhupada's purport. Saintly persons are generally very kind to all kinds of living entities, but they are not unhappy when a serpent or a scorpion is killed. It is not good for saintly persons to kill, but they are encouraged to kill demons who are exactly like serpents and scorpions. Therefore, all the saintly sages decided to kill King Vena, who was so dreadful and dangerous to all human society. We can appreciate the extent to which the saintly sages actually control the king. If the king or government becomes demonic, it is the duty of saintly persons to upset the government and replace it with deserving persons who follow the orders and instructions of saintly persons. So previously in a text that we read yesterday, Prabhupada commented that Brahmins nowadays don't have power. So therefore what they should do is not take part in these type of activities and disrupt the government. They should chant Hare Krishna themselves and influence others to chant Hare Krishna. But Prabhupada here is giving another type of instruction. And perhaps one day there'll be a person who is extremely saintly and extremely powerful and who'll read this. And Krishna from within his heart will say, "This is meant for you." Perhaps. It's hard to tell. Of course, when we see success and failure or happiness and distress, that this isn't working, why has this happened? We think in terms of what? 20 years, 15 years, 30 years, 40 years. Only Krishna has the true vision of what reality is and what the future lies ahead. We can only know our small little part and our own duty, and we should do that. And who knows what the future will bring. If the king or the government becomes demonic, it is the duty of a saintly person to upset the government and replace it with deserving persons who follow the orders and instructions of saintly persons. We should not imitate. The sages continued. this impious, impudent man does not deserve to sit on the throne at all. He is so shameless that he even dared insult the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. Isn't it interesting how, who is maintaining everyone? What is Krishna's name that means that he maintains all living entities? Janardana? Bhutavadana? Bhutabrit? So, who is maintaining the king, Vena? It is Krishna. And he's looking elsewhere to himself for, as if he was the one maintaining everyone. And he's accusing the sages of that very thing that he's doing. And this is the natural tendency of all living entities in the material world or condition. The thing that they accuse others of is usually a great fault they themselves have. You are acting unchaste, he said to the sages. Give up your envy. He was acting unchaste. He was envious of Krishna. He was neglecting the one who was maintaining him. And even he was put into power by the sages themselves and he was neglecting them. He was the one who was being unchaste. He was the one who was being envious, and therefore he said, you stop this envy of this envious mentality. So they said, we cannot tolerate this. He's going to burn the world to ashes. He is so envious, he is envious of Vishnu. And Prabhupada in his purport, he explains that devotees who are naturally very tolerant should not be tolerant of hearing blasphemy to devotees or to the Lord. Should not tolerate that. They continued. But for King Vena, who was simply inauspicious, who would blaspheme the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose mercy one is awarded all kinds of fortune and opulence? So his position has been awarded by the Lord through the sages, and he is blaspheming? How disgraceful. And Prabhupada's purport is powerful, short but powerful. When human society, individually or collectively, becomes godless and blasphemes the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is certainly destined for ruination. Such a civilization invites all kinds of bad fortune due to not appreciating the mercy of the Lord. The great sages, thus manifesting their covert anger, the anger that they were covering, keeping hidden, they immediately decided to kill the king. King Vena was already as good as dead due to his blasphemy against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, without using any weapon, the sages killed King Vena simply by high-sounding words. It is Hamkritas, I think. Hamkritar. They made the sound vibration of hum, some very powerful sound vibration. And just by that vibration alone, they cursed and killed him. Just by that sound vibration alone, they killed him. And then, this section is over. Now, what did Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita was the result for those who have demoniac tendencies and qualities? What did Krishna say happens to such persons?
Cast them to lower and lower spiritual planes.
Yes. They attain hellish suffering and hellish existence. So what happened to Vena? Does anyone know? It describes, there's one purport where Prabhupada describes it. In the second canto. And actually, and then I saw in some Puranic reference that he, before this happened to him, he had to experience many kinds of hells. In the Padma Purana, in the Vamana Purana, there is mentioned some of the history of Vena and his mother Sunita. So Prabhupada explains in his purport to 2.7.9. He says, in the Vamana Purana, the history of Maharaj Vena and his degradation are fully described. When Maharaj Prithu heard about the hellish condition of his father Vena, who was suffering from leprosy, this was after having suffered in many hells, he had leprosy in the family of a Malecha. So Prithu Maharaj, his son, heard about this. Prithu Maharaj at once brought the former king to Kurukshetra for purification and relieved him of his sufferings. That's the little mention in there of what had happened. So he had leprosy after having suffered many hellish miseries. And there's also another interesting reference from the Padma Purana, that because his grandfather was whom?
Death.
Was death. And who was death?
Yamaraj.
So Yamaraj has very many fearful qualities. He's terrifying, certainly. But yet Yamaraj is a great devotee too. He's one of the Mahajans. He preaches Bhagavad Dharma. So in one sense, we can ask the question, how is it that Yamaraj's grandson, because it describes in the previous chapter, how is it that Yamaraj's grandson, because Vena was born in that family, it describes that he had horrible qualities. So how is it that he attained horrible qualities just from being born in the family of death personified, Yamaraj? So in the Padma Purana, it tells a pastime that Sunita, the mother, the daughter of Yamaraj, had some of the qualities, the relentless qualities of her father, and she enjoyed hurting others. So there was once a sage, not a sage, a Gandhava, a young Gandhava, who was enwrapped in meditation in a forest. And this Gandhava, I can't remember his name, so it began with an S, Sodaba or something like that. He was trying to gain some perfection, some powers, to become the most expert musician. So he was meditating upon Saraswati, who is the goddess of music and learning. So he was meditating on Saraswati alone and performing austerities and penances. And Sunita, who was young and unmarried, was bothering him. He was young and very handsome, and she was just bothering him and disturbing his meditation. And he would say, "Go away, go away." But she wouldn't go away. And day after day, she would come and disturb him. And one day, he said, "Go away, go away." And she became angry at him, and she hit him. And he became angry at her. "Why are you doing this? Why are you disturbing me? Why did you beat me?" She replied, "My father is Yamaraj. He beats everyone. And no one who is sinless gets beaten by him. Only those who are wicked have trouble." And she went away. She became angry at him and went away. And she told her father what had happened, and he didn't respond at all. Yamaraj didn't respond. And the next day, she was more angry, and she came with a whip and beat him while he was performing his austerities and penances. And he was meditating, and he got up, and he was shivering with anger and pain, and he cursed her. He said, "You are so whatever, that you will, when you get married, you will have a son. You are so disrespectful. When you get married, you will have a son who will be completely disrespectful to the Shastras, to the Brahmins, and to the demigods. He will be so sinful." He cursed her in that way. And then he went back to his meditation. And her son was Vena, who indeed had those qualities. So the Puranas, sometimes they give us some of these histories that can answer some of the, fill in the details that answer some of the questions that we may have. So after all that, so we just heard what was the result of Vena's horrible actions. And then what did the sages do after they killed him by their mantras? They returned, this is text 35, they returned to their respective hermitages. And after all the sages returned to their respective hermitages, the mother of King Vena, Sunita, became very much aggrieved because of her son's death. She decided to preserve the dead body of her son by the application of certain ingredients and by chanting mantras, mantra yoga. So, Vena is dead, his body has been preserved. It continues. Once upon a time, the same saintly persons, after taking their bath in the river Saraswati, began to perform their daily duties by offering oblations into the sacrificial fires. So they were performing the sacrifices again now. After this, sitting on the bank of the river, they began to talk about the transcendental person and his pastimes. Satkata. So this is what saintly persons do, sages do. They talk about Krishna and his pastimes. But all was peaceful for them, but that was not the situation for the rest of the kingdom. Text 37 continues. In those days, there were various disturbances in the country that were creating a panic in society. Therefore, all the sages began to talk amongst themselves. Since the king is dead and there is no protector in the world, misfortune may befall the people in general on account of rogues and thieves. When the great sages were carrying out the discussion in this way, they saw a dust storm arising from all directions. This storm was caused by the running of thieves and rogues who were engaged in plundering the citizens. So what an incredible description. Just imagine how many thieves and rogues there were, that their running was causing an upraising of dust that was noticeable. Would the sages be able to tolerate this? Because the reason that they had enthroned Vena was that this powerful, horrible person would keep all the little horrible persons in check. And now the little horrible persons, without the big horrible person being present, were creating great havoc for the citizens. And it is... indeed, it is torture for the citizens when they're always afraid of thieves coming, and they work hard, the citizens, they work hard, and thieves come and plunder things. Their life is miserable. Rogues come, threaten them. Their life is miserable. They have no impetus to work. Their life is torture. So again, the sages were fearful about the situation for the poor citizens. Here's Prabhupada's purport to 37. And then we'll read his short purport to 38. Whenever there is a disturbance in the state or a panic situation, the property and lives of the citizens becomes unsafe. This we see all the time. Whenever law and order breaks down, immediately, out of nowhere, there's looting and killing, thievery, rioting. And it's not just in, quote, uncivilized countries. In every country this happens. When the electricity goes off, even in the United States, immediately rioting and looting, because the thieves immediately come out. The citizens become unsafe. This is caused by the uprising of various thieves and rogues. At such a time, it is to be understood that the ruler or the government is dead. In other words, there is no power. All of these misfortunes happened due to the death of King Vena. Thus the saintly persons became very anxious for the safety of the people in general. The conclusion is that even those saintly persons have no business in political affairs, they are always compassionate upon the people in general. Thus, even though they are always aloof from society, out of mercy and compassion, they consider how the citizens can peacefully execute their rituals and follow the rules and regulations of Vanashrama Dharma. That was the concern of these sages. In this age of Kali, everything is disturbed. Therefore, saintly persons should take to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra as recommended in the Shastras. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kaloa Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Gatyanayata. Both for spiritual and material prosperity, everyone should devotedly chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So Prabhupada goes back to that point, that everyone should chant Hare Krishna. Kalo nasteva nasteva nasteva. What hope is there in this world? This is Kali's time. This is Kali's kingdom. This is the age of quarrel, the age of hypocrisy, the age of disturbance. Manda samanda matayo manda abhagya. The age of misfortune, ubadrutaha, the age where everyone's mind is disturbed. This is Kali Yuga. So what to do? We should allow the disturbances of the age to drive us to the shelter of Krishna's names. That is the recommendation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Namasraya kore jatana tumi. Take shelter of Krishna's holy names. Bhaktivinod Thakur says, there is nothing else to be gained within this world. Prabhupada's short purport, two sentences to 38. Thieves and rogues simply await some political upset in order to take the opportunity to plunder the people in general. To keep thieves and rogues inactive in their profession, a strong government is always required. Text 40. Upon seeing the dust storm, the saintly persons could understand there were a great deal of irregularities due to the death of King Vena. Without government, the state was devoid of law and order, and consequently there was a great uprising of murderers, thieves, and rogues who were plundering the riches of the people in general. Although the great sages could subdue the disturbance by their powers, just as they could kill the king, they considered it improper on their part to do so, thus they did not attempt to stop the disturbance. The great sages began to think that although a Brahmin is peaceful and impartial because he is equal to everyone, it is still not his duty to neglect poor humans. By such neglect, a Brahmin's spiritual power diminishes, just as water kept in a cracked pot leaks out. We'll read the first paragraph of Prabhupada's purport here. This is very important. And Prabhupada, in his purport, he speaks of the mood of a Vaishnava, and he offers paraphrasing something from Prahlad Maharaj, something that it was really Prabhupada's own mood and own mood of preaching and compassion. Prabhupada's purport: Brahman is the topmost section of human society, are mostly devotees. They are generally unaware of the happenings within the material world because they are always busy in their activities for spiritual advancement. Nonetheless, when there is a calamity in human society, they cannot remain impartial. If they do not do something to relieve the distressed condition of human society, it is said that due to such neglect, their spiritual knowledge diminishes. Almost all the sages go to the Himalayas for their personal benefit, but Prahlad Maharaj said that he did not want liberation alone. He decided to wait until he was able to deliver all the fallen souls of the world. So this is very exalted, advanced consciousness. One's own consciousness must be full of Krishna. It cannot be imitated. One cannot try to save or neglect one's own salvation and save the rest of the world unless one practically himself is already saved. Unless one is living within the mercy of Krishna. Unless one is gaining so much spiritual empowerment from Krishna, to imitate this will not work. One will run out of energy. So one who is not on the level of Prahlad Maharaj must make sure that he himself is gaining sufficient spiritual energy even to preach. One has to feel the happiness of Krishna consciousness himself. One has to have sufficient shelter and of Krishna's holy names, of the Bhagavatam, of the Dham, of the association of devotees, of the deities, so that one can give some shelter to others. Prabhupada even once wrote me a letter saying that I will pray to Krishna that he will award you the necessary bliss that is required for preaching. He said that, because if one is miserable oneself, how effective is one's preaching going to be? Please chant Hare Krishna and your life will be miserable like mine. No matter what we say, no matter the words that come out of our mouth, don't think that people don't get an indication of what's actually in our hearts and mind. So it's so important that the devotees, all devotees, especially those who are preaching, really take care to get sufficient shelter in those places where shelter truly exists. Otherwise, if we don't take sufficient shelter in the internal energy, the external energy will increasingly appear alluring to us, and it will be beckoning to us. Maya will beckon, please come here for shelter. I will give you very, very comfortable shelter. Maya will do that for sure. So the sages, so Prabhupada has explained here, such a wonderful attitude of Prahlad Maharaj, the true Gosti and Andi attitude. And if there's a few moments at the end, I'll read three verses of Prahlad Maharaj, which really typifies this atmosphere of the compassionate Vaishnava heart. But for now, we shall continue. So, yet the verse says that if a sage is neglectful of others when they are disturbed and in difficulty, he will lose his own position of saintliness. Just like, what is the example? The crack in the pot, the heart is not sound. He will lose his brahminical position, his sagely position, because there is hardness of the heart. There's a cute little story that exemplifies this to some the mentality of a sage. There was one sadhu walking along, and he saw a scorpion who was drowning in water. So he went and picked up the scorpion, and he took him out. And as he was taking the scorpion out, the scorpion stung him. And he was walking with a friend who saw this. And they were walking along still further. And he saw another scorpion in water. So he did the same thing. So he picked up the scorpion in his hand so he wouldn't drown. And he took him out and put him down. And as he was taking him out, the scorpion did the same thing. He stung him. So his companion said to him, How come you did this? How come you weren't angry at the scorpion? How come you did this? And the sadhu replied, he's not at fault. He was just following his nature. And then the companion said, but why did you take a scorpion out a second time? He said, and I was also just following my nature. Of course, one could ask, why didn't he take something else to pick him up out or something like that? But then there would be no story to tell. But this is actually the nature of a sadhu, Tatikshava Karunaka, Sarava Sarvabhushanam. Very compassionate, no enemies, very tolerant. Ajata Shatrava Shatu, no enemies at all. Shanta, very peaceful. Sarava Sarvabhushanam. So, the sage has decided that the descendants of the family of the saintly King Anga should not be stopped. In other words, the dynasty of Dhruva Maharaj should continue. For in this family, the semen was very powerful, and the children were prone to become devotees of the Lord. So after making a decision, the saintly persons and sages... So it's interesting that the sinful vena had attracted a body, or a sinful soul was attracted to a body that also was sinful. But the soul had moved on within his subtle body, adishtayam manastayam visha upasevate, and he suffered. And later on, we heard that he was saved from his suffering of leprosy by the mercy of his father, Prithu Maharaj. But that body also carries the parabdha karma, the sinfulness that he was due to experience in this life. So the body, in that sense, embodying some sin, is a sinful body. But yet, the body, on the other hand, was extremely powerful, being born in the dynasty of Swayambhuva, Manu, Uttanapada, and Dhruva Maharaj. And in that dynasty, There was such a strong tendency to not only be powerful, but to become devotees. So the sages decided that even though Vena had no children, his body, which had been preserved by Sunita, was still worthy of something, even though it had a sinful element to it, due to his improper mother. So they made a decision to continue the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj. The saintly persons and sages churned the thighs of the dead body of King Vena with great force. And according to a specific method, with great force and according to a specific method. And as a result of this churning, a dwarf-like person was born from King Vena's body. Prabhupada's purport towards the second half of his purport to 43, he says, he comments on this amazing occurrence, the churning of a dead body to produce living entities. Although dead, the body of King Vena was preserved by drugs and mantras chanted by King Vena's mother. In this way, the ingredients for the production of another body were there. When the body of the person named Bahuka came out of the dead body of King Vena, it was really not very astonishing. It was simply a question of knowing how to do it. From the semen of one body, another body is produced, and the life symptoms were visible due to the soul's taking shelter of this body. One should not think that it was impossible for another body to come out of the dead body of Maharaj Vena. This was performed by the skillful action of the sages. Cannot comment any more on the skillful action of the sages, except they knew many, many things. This person, born from King Vena's thighs, was named Bahuka, and his complexion was as black as a crow's. All the limbs of his body were very short, his arms and legs were short, and his jaws were large. His nose was flat, his eyes were reddish, and his hair copper-colored, reddish-colored. He was very submissive and meek, and immediately after his birth he bowed down and inquired, "Sirs, what shall I do?" The great sages replied, "Nishida, please sit down." Thus Nishada, the father of the Naishada race, was born. So this was a sinful race of thieves who were meant to live in the forest, and by their enacting in their sinful activities of thievery, they dissipated the sinful reaction that was in the body of King Vena. And when that sinful reaction was dissipated by Bahuka's leaving, then what was left was the pure body, the pure descendant of Dhruva Maharaj and Uttanabad. After the sinful reaction was dissipated, that pure body was remaining. After his Nishada's birth, he immediately took charge of all the resultant actions of King Vena's sinful activities. As such, this Nishada class are always engaged in sinful activities like stealing, plundering, and hunting. Consequently, they are only allowed to live in the hills and the forest. We'll read Prabhupada's final purport to this chapter. The Nishadas are not allowed to live in cities and towns because they are sinful by nature. As such, their bodies are very ugly and their occupations are also sinful. We should, however, know that even these sinful men who are sometimes called Kiratas can be delivered from their sinful condition to the topmost Vaishnava platform by the mercy of a pure devotee. Engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord can make anyone however sinful he may be, fit to return home back to Godhead. One has only to become free from all contamination by the process of devotional service. In this way, everyone can become fit to return home back to Godhead. This is confirmed by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Mami pata vipasvitya ye pisu papayonaya striya vaishisthatashu jas te pi anti paramgatim. O son of Prita, those who take shelter of me, those who take shelter of me, though they be of lower birth, women, vaishyas, merchants, as well as sudras, workers, can approach the supreme destination. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fourth canto, 14th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Story of King Vena. And that was basically Prabhupada's idea, that everyone should take shelter of Krishna and become qualified to go back home, back to Godhead. And Prabhupada, in his compassion, dedicated so much of his life and to just that. And he dedicated certainly every moment of his life after having a society of his ISKCON to spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. Here's what Prahlad Maharaj says. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. For wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. My dear Lord Nisringadev, I see that there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance. Not caring for the big cities and towns, they go to the Himalayas or the forest to meditate with vows of silence, monavrata. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to the shelter at your lotus feet. So that was certainly the mood of Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Questions, comments? Yes. Okay, 37. But I can't hear you very well. It's why don't you move a little closer? The fans, when they...
As well as being interested in going back to Godhead.
You mean themselves interested in going back to Godhead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're interested in going back.
Yes.
So this whole section, we have a discussion in our group about that, what are practical things that we can understand that can help us to become back.
Well, we can sing Hare Krishna. That will certainly, unless one is extremely pure, It's very hard to exact any change within the world at all. That would be a very good start. It's clear why sages and why Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted Vanashrama, why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted Daivi Vanashrama, and why Prabhupada wanted it. It's because most people cannot... People need a material situation that's also favorable for their spiritual advancement. Yes? And so that's the basic idea, why a culture is there that is meant to take care of one's material necessities, but simultaneously help one spiritually advance. That because the contemporary civilization is a civilization, but the basic principles go against spiritual advancement. So to have a culture, a civilization that it's parallel to one's spiritual advancement is ideal. So if your question is, what's the practical thing to do? So because for so many years we've tried so many practical, what we thought were practical, most of them didn't work. Because one of the reasons is that the outside culture is so much in opposition to spiritual life. It makes it very hard to set up a subculture. Prabhupada's basic idea to do this was the agricultural communities, village life. That was Prabhupada's basic idea. He said when he was going to the United States in 1977, he was heading in that direction and he got only as far as England. He said, I'm going to Gita Nagari to establish Vanashrama. I will teach them how to live off the land. That was what he said exactly. But nowadays, so there were, at that time there were many, many, many rural communities in ISKCON who were trying to live a simple life. But it was very, very, very difficult. I lived in one of them for 7 years. And it's very hard, for instance, to plow the land with oxen that will take you a week to do a particular area of land when your neighbor will be able to do the same thing in an hour with his tractor. The romance of it fades very quickly. So not very many of the communities survived, in fact. But there is a renewed push to establish the essence of Vanashrama in this way by rural communities. I know that there are some that are quite at least somewhat successful. I think I think Purusha Triumvirat in Brazil is trying to do something. Yes? You know anything? Yes? Yes? You live there?
It's
that's the thing. It's so difficult.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to get devotees who are brought up in the cities to live in the country, in the rural communities, because they want to go shopping all the time, you know, and things like that. It's just really, really hard if you're not brought up in that way to just change your life and do that. And in Brazil, the weather is warm. And New Vrindavan, very, very difficult. People just don't want to do it. So I don't have a practical solution to that. I tried for years and I've returned to chanting Hare Krishna. We'll leave that one for someone else. Yes, you have. And of course, Sivaram Maharaj is trying to do something in Hungary. Bhakti Vrinda Govinda Maharaj in Kazakhstan, they're trying to set up something with these ideals. Maybe other places too.
I love that you didn't mention practices, the Sanatana Dharma.
Deity worship, basically.
That's fine.
That's the basic.
Brahminical part.
The deity worship.
And so the Brahminical part is part of the Vajra Brahmin. That's the link from the Vajra Brahmin.
But the trick is that how, the question is, if people are living in a rural community, how are you going to get them so satisfied that they want to stay there? When you have four devotees, it's impossible.
You have no time for anything else.
No time.
What
Prabhupada would say, simple living, high thinking, he said, you grow your own food and save the rest of your time for chanting Hare Krishna. But unfortunately, there's no rest of your time very often. But I do know, also I visited devotees in Saranagati, in the farm in near Vancouver in Canada. And they had very short growing season, very short, maybe only a third of the year, not like even in Brazil where it's probably all year, every day of the year. And there was one devotee who was basically self-sufficient, at least in his food. And he grew all his food during that time, and the rest of the year, he actually could chant Hare Krishna and study and things like that. He had a one-acre garden, or maybe it was a quarter-acre garden only. And on that, he would spend the growing season just growing things. It was wonderful. He was healthy, happy. And they would preserve the food. As soon as you need money, and you always need money, in this civilization, it's very difficult.
Then when April runs out, that will automatically force the people to go to the basic back to the country.
And wouldn't it be, and then especially if we have a world war, that will make really things really great too.
It's back, the oil rose, it runs out.
Who knows?
It's not going to happen.
I don't. You can consult your astrologer. I remember devotees used to think like that. Boy, when the war comes, the preacher's going to be so great. And I'd go, because war is hell. If civilization as we know it collapses, and if there's no, unless they figure out some way to make solar power or practical or something like that, or whatever they do. All these big buildings, all the cities are finished, no electricity, rioting, killing, murdering. It will be hell. And you think, oh yeah, I'll go in there and preach. Well, no law and order, you're going to preach and you'll live peacefully.
But no, but the value of public agrarian society will be high value.
And then everyone will come and
enjoy.
And come in with their guns and kill you.
Huh?
I'm saying, in where?
In Africa.
In Africa what?
People go to the parks and kill the people who grow food. You steal everything, plunder everything.
But don't think it's only Africa. As soon as people are hungry and they see that you have something that they want, don't think they're not going to kill you. It's a heavy world, by the way. Yeah, no romance. Yes? Yes. Yes. The soul. The soul, not the body. The soul, because of his sinful reactions, he had to suffer so much. But this Parabdha karma. Excuse me?
So when they turn the body and another soul came up, that soul.
No. That soul was not qualified. It was qualified only to get some mercy from his father. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.